welcome to yet, yes, that's right, yet another week of Lost in Science. It's so great to have you with us today. It's a really special show, actually, one of two very special shows that we've got coming up for you in the next 2 weeks. My name is Lyndon, and we're joined by a few people in the studio today, the first of which is Stu. G'day, Stu, how you doing?
Hi, I'm here most times, so I'm not all that special.
You're special to me.
Oh, thanks, Lyndon.
You're special to science. You're special to Lost in Science. Don't sell yourself short.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not really about you, the show today. We have got two very special co-hosts with us in the studio. Now, some of you may know that when I'm not being lost in science, I am working with research students at the University of Melbourne in the science communication space. I teach in the science communication program at the university, getting researchers from across the uni to talk about their work in an engaging and informative way. And one of the subjects that we teach is where we get a bunch of science students together and we say, talk about science. And so we are lucky enough to have, we've got four students who are joining us on the show. We'll have two this week and two next week. And so today we have got Jess and Nikki with us in the studio. Jess, hello. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm wondering, maybe could you tell us what your science research is about and then what you've brought along for us today?
My personal science research.
Please.
Yes, I am studying gangan cockatoos using acoustic monitoring. It's really exciting. Be more exciting if they were there.
It's hard to acoustically monitor when they're not there.
Yeah, but it's been a great adventure trying to figure out if they're there.
I'm imagining Simon and Garfunkel's Sounds of Silence just playing across the trees. Oh, I'm sorry that they're not there, Jess. Maybe are you bringing a slightly more hopeful story?
Yeah, this one is, they're definitely there. We've definitely heard them. They are elephants, and they may call each other by names.
Okay.
The elephants in the room. They're not in this room.
No. This room's full enough already.
Yes, there's enough people in here without the elephants.
I'm sure we'd notice.
And Nikki, hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
What is your area of research, Nikki?
I'm studying graph theory.
Graph theory. Okay. I'm putting you on the spot now. This is a bit mean. What's graph theory?
It's about coloring some map or design some traffic roads for some social and some people.
Oh, it's great when maths and stats research collides with the real world. I think it's so important and such a valuable, interesting thing to do. Are you talking about maths with us today?
Actually, I'm not talking maths at all today. I just want to describe some very cute neighbors we've seen every day.
Some cute neighbors that we've seen every day. Well, that sounds like we've got a fairly animal-based show today, Stu.
Mm.
Let's get on with it.
Congratulations on your discovery, which may well prove to be among the most significant in the history of science.
I cannot accept half-baked theories that sell newspapers. I'm a scientist.
Who are you? Who are so wise in the ways of science?
A most distinguished scientist whose name we know, even in the wild of Transylvania.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you are listening to Lost in Science.
Welcome back. You're on Lost in Science with our very special first of a two-parter episode with our science communication students. First up, Jess. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm excited. You dropped a little hint before the break that you wanted to talk about something big that was definitely there, something with big ears that never forgets. Elephants. Tell us this tale.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I want to talk a little bit about names first. So if I were to just yell at your name, hey, Lyndon, hey, Nikki, hey, Stu, you'd probably look around and show some response, right? Feel like most of us respond when our names are called. Unless it's your parents, then you might ignore it.
Well, they'll use your full name.
Yeah, and then
that's when you run.
That's attention. But yeah, it turns out that elephants aren't much different than us in this. They have names too, and they actually recognize when someone is calling their name.
Wow. So I'm really curious about, they have some surname?
We're not sure yet, but we might get there. So animal communication is fascinating in general. We know that animals talk in all sorts of ways. They do alarm calls, they kind of talk to their potential mates. It's also just a part of their social bonding. All animals communicate in some way, like the tiny creatures and then some of the largest ones, like our elephants. Do any of you have pets?
Yeah, I have two pets. They are just some like two rabbits and like some Peter and the Peter's cousin.
I have a dog, but don't let her know that she's a pet because she thinks that she's a human person.
Well, maybe that's what she's trying to say when she's barking at you, but we don't really know yet. But the big question is, how far does this go? How far do animals go in the way that they communicate? Do they talk like us? That's what's really gotten me curious. So much of what we know about animal language is based on mimicry or copying sounds. Parrots and dolphins are kind of standout examples of this. Parrots are well known for their mimicking sounds. They can repeat things that they've heard, even words, human words, which could be good or bad depending on who's teaching them the words. And dolphins are also really interesting in this way. They self-name themselves. So an individual dolphin will make a whistling, and then that is like their whistle. Other dolphins will mimic that whistle when they want to grab the dolphin's attention.
So maybe they are just mimic, or they actually understand the meaning behind them.
So with the whistling, they associate that specific whistle with the dolphin who came up with it. So it's the same way of me being like, I'm Jessica. You're going to call me Jessica.
So the dolphins kind of introduce themselves to other dolphins.
Yes.
They say, hey, how you going? I'm Flipper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But with cute little whistles.
Yeah.
Until recently, we thought mimicry was kind of as far as the animal naming went, but elephants seem to be changing the game on this a bit. We know elephants are these highly intelligent, really social creatures. They have self-awareness where if they see themselves in the mirror, they're like, oh, I know her. That's me. They also have these incredible memories, and they use tools, which are both major indicators of intelligence for animals. So they communicate vocally in a few different ways. You know, they're loud trumpeting, but the main way they communicate is through rumbles. And these rumbles can travel seismically, so underground for up to 16 kilometers.
Wow.
It's really far.
That's a long way to shout.
Well, they're just kind of rumbling or vibrating the ground. And the rumbles are unique to individuals. So it'd be the same way how we all have a different cadence or sound in the way we speak. The elephant rumbles have that. So they don't produce signature sounds, but they do have like their own cadence.
So if you were to separate out the sound waves from the different elephants, they would all have a different kind of sound pattern, you think?
We'll come back to that.
Ooh.
So these new findings are showing that elephants might create names for each other as they're communicating. So instead of copying each other's sounds, they're out there creating nicknames for each other. The researcher Michael Pardo and his team from Colorado State University were the ones looking into this. They published a study last year in 2024 in Nature, Ecology, and Evolution. They gathered recordings from multiple herds of African savanna elephants, stemming from 1986 to 2022. So they're different herds, but they're all from Kenya. And it included 101 elephants, mainly females and juveniles. They were able to identify these elephants by their ears, just to help keep track of who's talking. And they collected in total 469 rumbles, specifically for greetings and caregiving, since that's mainly when they would use the names.
Could you give us some example of their songs?
Absolutely. I brought some recordings with me. It's not of the rumbles, since we can't hear them, but they are some really beautiful growls. So I have two recordings. They're both supplied by Michael Pardo to National Geographic, and is the same elephant. Her name is Frida, and she is communicating to two different ones. The first elephant is Donatella.
Wow.
And the second one is Rothko. And so back to what you asked about the sound waves. Because these rumbles, they're different than the growls that we can hear. These rumbles are infrasonic, meaning they're low frequency we're not able to detect them. But they are also too complex to interpret on a spectrogram. So they instead used this subset of AI modeling called Random Forest to help analyze the data. And what they found with this was really interesting. So the results from the random forest modelings could predict which elephant a call was directed to using proximity scores, which is basically, to simplify, a measure of similarity between two data points, or in this case, how often two calls end up matching each other across all the other calls. So the key findings were that the calls between the same caller and receiver had a higher proximity or were more similar than the calls between the same caller and different receivers. And they were also able to identify who the intended receiver was by looking at the structure of the call using the random forest modeling.
So they were able to figure out which elephant the other elephant was trying to talk to based on the structure identified through the random forest modeling.
Yes.
Is this basically they've come up with a way for caller ID for elephants?
Kinda, yeah. The elephants did not imitate the receiver's voice. The caller had distinct traits in their vocalizations for the specific receiver. And it was different depending on who the receiver was. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really like some phone number. Really interesting.
Yes. And this was supported by doing playback experiments as well. So the researchers played calls that were directed towards certain elephants in these herds. And the elephants could determine if a call was meant for them just by hearing it. And they would show physical signs of hearing that their name was being called. Their ears would perk up. They'd kind of walk towards the source of the sound and then rumble back to it.
That's amazing, but also a bit mean to sort of say, hey, hey, nothing here.
Psych.
prank calling elephants. That's what they're doing.
It's for science. So, yeah, the names were not being mimicked. And this means that they have a capacity for abstract thought. They're inventing concepts like a nickname. A name is a concept. And this is just a breakthrough in our understanding of animal communication. It opens the door to understanding more of their language, even though it's still really early stages. 469 rumbles is not that many, but we can get more. AI tools are still being developed. Maybe we'll figure out what other names they have for things. Maybe they have nicknames for us.
I don't know if we want to know those. Do we?
I'm sure they're really nice and respectful.
Just like we are really nice and respectful.
I'm sure.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far? Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
We're back. You're with Lost in Science. And now I pass the microphone over to you, Nikki. You told us you wanted to talk about some cute neighbours, but is that right? Do we all really think they're cute?
Yeah, I think it's really cute. may I ask, do you very frequently feel some birds very noisy or bothering you when you are asleep?
Definitely.
So, any special preference for you?
On bird calls?
For the birds?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little biased. I think gang gang calls are my favorite.
How do they sound, the gang gang cockatoos, Jessica?
They sound like a rusty door.
Oh, do they?
I can't imitate.
Oh, worth a try.
Almost got me.
As Halloween is coming, I just want to ask, have you noticed there's some decoration about some ravens selling in the store for the Halloween?
I've definitely seen that. Some of my favorite decorations.
Oh, maybe people really like to link some raven and these witches or some dark stories.
Yeah, ravens, generally, you told me they were a cute neighbor, but I don't think of ravens as cute. They're a big, scary black bird.
It's really like some Chinese old saying. People likely to describe someone has a very bad mouth as some raven's mouth. It just describes someone. saying some unlucky words and it's eventually come true. Maybe I think in the Asian culture, they don't like some dark and some dark colors and some very harsh songs.
Is that a common thing that people would say you've got a raven's mouth because you're saying mean things about people or evil things?
Yeah. But the situation is really different in Australia. I find that people don't consider the raven as some very dark or witchy thing.
Have you seen how ravens sometimes form bonds with people? They collect little trinkets that you leave outside and then they'll bring you your own trinkets.
What classifies as a raven trinket?
Could be like a quarter, a rubber band, a little stick. Maybe the omen started because they were scared of the little raven trinkets.
Wow. All right. Now I'm even more terrified of this blackbird. So tell us, Nikki, what's the science here? What's the science behind these ravens? Should we be afraid of a raven's mouth?
For some harsh sounds, I don't believe so. I think it's maybe just their living style. Some researchers from the Australian Museum and the bird's backyards give us some example of them. I bring some American raven songs to show. I haven't found some Australian one, but I think they're really similar. The first one is territory calls, listening. Wow, its sounds is really long and slow. Maybe next time you can easily to recognize it. It just means the raven marking their lands.
Oh yeah, that one does sound a bit like an Australian raven, doesn't it?
The ones I heard, yeah.
Like the second is very gentle. It's called contact calls. The raven use it to connect their family members and friends. And the third one, we should be careful about it, is transit calls. That means some birds fly to another bird's land. I'm not harmful at all. I'm just passing by.
That's very polite.
Yeah, really polite. And also have some return calls. Maybe you can very frequently hear it in the evening. It is very slightly longer. Well, it's one song. We should remember it. It is alarm calls.
Uh-oh.
Have you attacked by any birds?
Yes, I have. Only in Australia.
So it is time you should remember this call.
I didn't realize ravens could attack humans. Was it a raven that attacked you, Jess?
No, it was a magpie.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. But ravens can also attack people, right? I understand that you're trying to clear the name of these blackbirds and I'm bringing us back down. But do ravens attack people?
Yeah, I think so.
So you said that they have territory calls. Do they make those territory calls only to other birds or will they do that to people who maybe wander into their territory? Will they warn the people to stay away with the same call?
For this king of the raven, maybe they just want to protect their land. So they were not, I think they call it for any animals. And we guess people don't like the raven because these harsh sounds, also their colors, I think. Do you think they are just black or something else?
I've always assumed they were just black.
Actually, I think they are not that black. Their feathers are not flat black pointed. Under the sunlight, we can find easily their feathers is deep blues, purples, also some greens.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and scientists explain this as a result of feather microstructures bending light, much like some prism.
So that's similar to how the color blue appears in birds, so it's just light refraction.
Maybe for some artists, it's more easily to recognize them. And they really have some research about the birds have more sensitive neural cells to notice these colors. So for other birds, the raven not that black. They are colorful.
Oh, so it's our eyes that can't see their colors.
Yeah.
But the other birds can see their colors.
Yeah, I think so.
So they look a lot different to other birds than what they look to us.
Yeah. We can't hear elephants talking to each other. We can't see proper colours on birds. What kind of rubbish species are we?
They're keeping all these secrets from us. No wonder people don't trust the ravens.
They don't even know they're scary to look at. It's not their fault.
Well, also, let us guess. Lots of people just consider raven as a scientist in the animal world.
Yes, we've definitely done shows before. I know Claire has a big thing for corvids.
Oh, yeah. And corvids are super smart birds.
Super smart birds.
Yes. Yeah.
Ravens are a type of corvid, are they not?
Yes.
They are in the super smart bird
family.
The super smart bird department, ravens definitely belong there. They are scientists. And every time I see a paper that comes out about crows or ravens or any kind of corvid, I think they're coming. It's only a matter of time before they come for us.
I know Jess said before that using tools is a sign of intelligence, and ravens can use tools.
Mm, absolutely.
There's an old fable of the raven who drops stones into the water bottle to bring the level of the water up to the top.
Oh, I've seen them using sticks to kind of get out food from holes and those kinds of things.
Mm.
Yeah. At the very beginning, I just guess maybe it's that story. But the scholars from the Washington have realized this experiment. They really can use a stone to drink some water from the bottle. Oh, one thing we should remember. If you hated by one raven, maybe you will hated by the ravens who are family and friends.
All right, now I'm really confused. You're telling me that they're beautiful. You're telling me that their calls aren't evil. They're just going about their daily life. You're telling me that they're super intelligent, but now you're telling me that they hold a grudge and they also share that grudge within their family. So if I annoy one raven through some accident, that wouldn't be my fault. I definitely wouldn't be going out of my way to hurt a raven. You're
deliberately annoying ravens.
I'm not deliberately trying to get on the wrong side of a raven. Then what happens? How do they tell their whole family that I'm on the most wanted list?
They really have a very tense network with their relative and families, just like human.
So that would be another sign of intelligence then, that they can gossip about how they hate their neighbor down the street.
So maybe we are their bothering neighbors.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe they're not our bothering neighbors. We're their bothering neighbors, and we shouldn't mess with them because they are quite powerful intellectually and with those big, strong beaks. Thanks, Nikki. I feel like we've learnt a lot today about animals that are much smarter than us all around the world. And hopefully that's been helpful for you as well. Looking forward to seeing you next time on Lost in Science.
And that is all we have time for this week on Lost in Science. Thank you for joining us in Getting Lost. If you have any questions or suggestions for the team, get in touch with us by email. We are lostinsci@gmail.com. You can send cheap tweets to us at lostinscience1 on Twitter, or you can find us on the ubiquitous Facebook. Lost in Science is recorded at the studios of 3CR in Melbourne on the land of the Kulin Nation and is broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find a podcast version of the show on 3cr.org.au, or you can tune in the way you did this week when we return in our usual time slot to get
Lost in Science! We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.